G'day, I'm Mordechai Becher.
And I am Yehoshua Karsh.
And the subject of today's podcast is something called Tamei HaMitzvahs, reasons for the mitzvahs, rationale for the mitzvahs, the commandments. And we're going to discuss a range of questions. For example,
what is the practical benefit from having Tamei HaMitzvahs? Is there some kind of practical benefit to us? Another one is, who gets to decide what the Tamei HaMitzvahs are? After all, it seems like there's some places where the Rambam will give certain Tamei HaMitzvahs, the Ramban will give others. The Ramban at sometimes gives more than one Tam for a particular mitzvah. And I would imagine that if more Rishonim took this on as a project, you'd have many, many Tamei HaMitzvahs. So who gets to decide what the Tamei HaMitzvahs are? Could I decide based on my studies what the Tam for a particular mitzvah is? And then also the Ramban and you were just telling me that, I mean, the Ramban's quoting the Rambam, that every mitzvah has a tam, and there are some that very few people know, like, for instance, Parah Aduma, only Moshe Rabbeinu knows the tam for that mitzvah. There are others where very few people might know them. Why is it important that there be, that every mitzvah have a tam? Why is that something emphasized, that every mitzvah has some kind of tam? So those are some of my questions.
Right. Yeah, they're all, yeah. Great questions. And it's, so I guess let's begin with, do the mitzvot have reasons? Do the mitzvahs have reasons? So the Rambam in Guide for the Perplexed and the Ramban in his commentary on Chumash both agree that every mitzvah has a reason. They may not be accessible to everyone. Some may be accessible to only the elite few, the 10 or so people who listen to our podcast, right? The elite of the intellect.
Yes.
But all of them have a mitzvah, and all of them have a reason. And the Rambam argues that it must be so, because to ascribe to God, the infinite creator, the all-knowing, omniscient, wise, perfect creator, that he does something, he commands something without a reason, just arbitrary, doesn't make sense. You would not ascribe to a person with an intellect that they would do things without reason. You would not suggest that someone tells you, please do this for me, and has no reason. It doesn't make sense, logically speaking. Right. And the Ramban says, you know, the Ramban agrees with that. And the way he puts it, he says, this is in Devarim 22. He says, this Zeha Inyan, this idea that the rabbi, meaning the Rambam, maintains that all the mitzvahs have a reason, Mavuar Hu Me'od, is extremely clear. It's very, very clear. No, he's like, rarely do we see him agree so strongly. But he says, and every mitzvah has both a ta'am, v'to'elet, v'tikun la'odom, has a reason, a value, and a benefit for the person, aside from, he says, the reward for being obedient to God. So it's type of interesting. So Rav Kook, we shared that, that he has a, yeah. It's a book, it's been, I actually have the published editions, called Talalei Oiris, which is Rav Kook's, not very well known, his book on Tamei HaMitzvahs. And one of the things he begins with is the idea that every time we do a mitzvah, there's really a duality in our performance. I'm doing it because Hashem said to do it. The Sulamidi, period. What is my motivation to do a mitzvah? Because the Almighty Creator has the moral right to Kamami, and I do it. He says, but there's another component, which is that I try to understand what's the content of the mitzvah, the lesson of the mitzvah, the impact of the mitzvah. So I think there's, you know, those two components. In other words, it may be that it's possible to distinguish between, on the one hand, my intention, my purpose, rather my motivation in doing the mitzvah is because Hashem commanded it. That doesn't mean, though, I cannot try to look into it and see, but, you know, what's the value here? I think one of the best ideas I heard was from Reb Moshe Shapira. I'm pretty sure you heard it as well. I think he said he was on the train on the way to Haifa with Reb Dessler. Does that make sense? I
know he was talking to Reb Dessler. I don't know.
He was a teenager at the time.
Yeah.
And he asked Reb Dessler, and this I think is also an answer to your other question, which is who's got the right to give reasons for the mitzvah? So can each of us do that? So he asked Reb Dessler, how can anyone ascribe a reason to a mitzvah? Like, you're privy to why Hashem said something? However great the person is, like whoever, I don't remember who said this, but ilu yidativ hayitiv, if I'd know him, I'd be him.
Right.
So how do I? So Reb Dessler said.
Oh, wait, I want to add one more thing. I think because he also asked, even when you get the Tom, it's never all encompassing.
Correct.
Like, because let's say the tefillin. So the tefillin on your head are perhaps so that you could focus on the contents of the tefillin and help you focus your mind, direct your thoughts towards Hashem in a particular way. That doesn't explain why they're black. It doesn't explain why they're leather. It doesn't explain, you know, all these other things. It just tends to explain one piece of it.
Yeah. Although there are commentaries who do discuss why they're square. Rav Hirsch says square is always a human artificial shape. He says, in fact, we call the tefillin batim because I'm supposed to take natural, like leather, and build it into a structure that contains within it the laws of God and the spirit of the Torah. And hence, it's square, which is the quintessential artificial human shape, as opposed to natural shapes, which are usually rounded.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Right.
Nice.
And black, there are commentaries who say that black, two reasons, very pragmatic reason. As soon as you give a color, it's open to variation. You say it's going to have to be green. How many shades of green are there? I mean, ask an artist, right? I mean, seriously, right? You say black, there's only one type of black. That's it, black, right? So it makes it uniform. Interesting. So others say, because when you have something black, it gives the impression of infinite depth. It's like you're looking into something, which is our understanding that there's an infinite depth in the Torah and in Hashem. I look into the black of that, and it's almost as if it's telling me you can draw what you can, but there's an infinite
nice.
depth. So,
that's beautiful.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, Reb Moshe asked Reb Dessler this question: how do we have the arrogance, the nerve, the chutzpah to advance reasons for the mitzvahs? So Reb Dessler said to him in Yiddish, "The tam fun de mitzvah, das is the geschmackkeit from the mitzvah. The tam, which the term we use for reasons for the mitzvahs, is actually ta'am, which also means taste. And what Reb Dessler says is what we're really doing, what the Rishonim, what the Rambam, what they're all doing is giving the taste of the mitzvah, the geschmackkeit to the mitzvah, as opposed to the reason. So what Reb Moshe explained is the taste, like food, you eat food to survive. But food has many pleasant side benefits. Taste, aroma, texture, aesthetics. Color. Right? There's many components to food, all which I enjoy. Right. And tremendously. And but right, ultimately I'm eating the foods. I need food to survive. But that's not to say there are not pleasant side benefits. So what Reb Moshe was saying is that we do the mitzvahs. This is very similar to what Reb Cook was saying. I do the mitzvah because Hashem commanded me to do the mitzvah. But I'm allowed to say, hey, here's a benefit of the mitzvah. And that's legit. I mean, anyone can do it. Why can't we do that? In other words, I say, look, here is a side benefit, and In other words, the tameh mitzvah doesn't mean the reason or the cause. It means the effect of the mitzvah.
Geschmack that I get from doing it,
It's an
which
effect.
is personal.
And that's legitimate for anyone.
That's like appreciating a fine painting or
Exactly.
something.
Like the Rambam, who got, he has the whole third section of Moreh Nevuchim, Guide for the Perplexed, is all about tameh, reasons for the mitzvahs. He got a lot of flack from the Provençal scholars about some of the reasons he gave because they felt he was trivializing the Torah. Example, Egla Arufa. Egla Arufa, right? Did we discuss this last? No, we didn't discuss. I seem to remember discussing this at some point with someone. It wasn't here in the podcast, was it? No, I don't think so.
It's possible,
Is it
but
possible?
I have learned that people just don't remember anything that they hear from us, so it doesn't matter.
Okay, great. Okay, wonderful. So let's repeat this. So
That gets me. Yeah.
Arufa is a body is found near a city, right? Closest to the closest city, largest population, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. Right? And we don't know who he seems to have been murdered. The elders of the city go out, they kill a egla, a calf in a riverbed, the whole town is out there, and the Sanhedrin says, our hands did not spill this blood. So most of us understand that, see that as some form of atonement, communal atonement for here is a person who we didn't take proper care of him, etc. Et cetera. The Rambam says in Guide for the Perplexed, Maimonides says, that it's an opportunity for the agents of the court to circulate amongst the crowd, all of whom are gathered there. Everyone's going to be talking about this murder. He says they've got the little notepads, right? And they will hopefully come up with some clues to solve the murder. He says, you have this like strange occurrence that never happens. It's like a sacrifice in a riverbed outside the temple. It's the court of the city. Everyone's there. He says, definitely, he's definitely people are going to be talking about this. He says, they'll pick up evidence, clues. They'll be able to investigate, solve the murder. He got flack for that, criticized. How dare he, right? But I
Because
think.
it sounds so pedestrian.
Exactly. But I think if you understand it, like Rav Dessler said, what's the Rambam telling us? He's saying one of the effects of it is this. Is that not true? Why can't we say that? Right? In other words, it might be an impact. Example, Shabbos. The Torah tells us Shabbos is Exodus, creation, right? The Rambam says in Guide for the Perplexed, he says, which wealthy person, which millionaire, which politician can spend a seventh of their life in leisure, not worrying about their business? He says, only someone who keeps Shabbos. Now, that's not what the Torah says, but it's a benefit. It's a benefit.
So yeah, it really is like admiring something beautiful or even talking about your gratitude, why you're grateful for something, and then you start suddenly there's more and more and more and more details that emerge as reasons to be grateful because yeah, I agree. You know
Correct.
what my favorite of all his reasons. Not that I can remember all his reasons, but my favorite of all his reasons is why you can't eat chazer. And I love it because he says that the reason you can't eat pigs is because they are a filthy animal. And they, if you raise, you're going to eat them, you're going to raise them. And everywhere they are, it looks worse than a beis hakise, worse than a toilet, not unlike France of today.
That's right. The French villages. Right. Thus speaks a Spaniard.
Ah, Spain and France,
It's awesome.
not unlike France of today.
Right. But I'll tell you what, travelers who came to Cordova, where the Rambam grew up, they compared London and Paris. They said are slums, sewer-filled, filthy slums compared to Cordova, compared to Granada, compared to Spain. So
There you go.
yes, it is. It is actually one of my favorites as well. Yes. So there's also in terms of the value. And by the way, changing socioeconomic and geopolitical circumstances may bring to our awareness a new time of the mitzvah. Right? You might say, example. today that we are, and I was just turning off the ringer on my phone, which is why I was distracted. But yes, how distracting are phones from conversation, from relationships, from everything, right? If you know what? If Shabbos was just there for the purpose of giving us 25 hours without cell phones, without social media, without internet, etc., that in itself, I think, would be is sufficient reason to justify it. I have a student, not really a student, someone I know who came to a class, is not actually a student, okay, right? But he was organizing retreats for tech executives in California. And the basis of the retreat was they go out into the countryside, there'd be no technology, no social media, no phones, nothing for 24 hours. Basically, he would charge them money for keeping Shabbos. Okay, right. But you think of it nowadays, I think there'd be is if the Rambam was writing today, would he not write that one of the values of Shabbos is that right? You're sitting there at the table. You're talking to each other and no phone, right? Not only that, but when you walk around a neighborhood, as opposed to driving, it's a different sense. You meet people, you schmooze with people, you get some level of exercise minimum, but wow, right? So I think that there is a treasure house of Tamei HaMitzvos in the Rav Dessler sense
Yeah.
that we can keep discovering. You know, I remember I was at a, I had this weird experience. I used to be a member of a board of, I don't know, I could be, I still am, but I just haven't heard from them for a long time, an Orthodox Jewish environmental organization. A group of like religious tree huggers, right? Which I do sympathize with.
Yeah.
And I actually did, someone actually saw me hugging a tree. Because I had a tree out the front, and that a truck driver had broken off a branch, and I remembered I was working on a kibbutz a long time ago, and when they break branches off an olive tree or something, they paint it with a special paint to prevent bugs. Actually, it's mentioned in the Mishnah in Shvius, right? They painted it with like tar to prevent insects from getting in. So I bought the special paint, right, and I actually had to hug the tree in order to paint the branch. And someone saw me and said, you actually are a tree hugger. So anyway, so that's background. So they had the United Nations had a in a they invited a whole bunch of clergy from different religions to a meeting on the invite at the Environmental Council. So as a member of that organization, I was invited. So there were imams and there were Protestant priests and Catholic priests and there were pastors, Lutheran pastors and Buddhists and Hindus and Jews, right? And it was type of interesting because one of the things I pointed out, someone had suggested we should have a once a year, everyone should walk, no cars. I mean, you think about it, that would huge reduction in carbon emissions if everyone, right? New York, for example, would say. So I said we do that every 7 days. Someone said we tried that once, didn't work. I said we do that every 7 days. Religious Jews don't use their cars 1 day out of seven. So no carbon emissions, right? Pretty, it's white, right? So, I mean, maybe the chillant may contribute to global warming. I'm not sure.
Not methane gas, though.
Okay.
That eating the chillant could
Yeah,
contribute to
we
methane gas.
don't want to be sensitive to that. So, I think it would be legitimate to say that one of the impacts of Shabbos technology, one of the impacts of Shabbos is environment. And these are impacts that maybe the Rishonim didn't know about. Because it wasn't
Are
relevant.
you saying that when the Ramban says there is a Tom, he doesn't mean there is the Tom, one singular Tom at the core. He just means there's always a Tom. We may just not know it. And the assumption could be there that there's always maybe even many Tomim, but we don't know it. But he's not saying that ultimately when you keep on going deeper and deeper and deeper, you're going to get to the Tom.
I think that's, I don't think necessarily there is the, I mean, there may be multiple. Yeah, I agree with you. And the Rambam says in a couple of places in Mishneh Torah that it's actually obligatory to look into the reasons for the mitzvahs and try and figure out. And he says, even regarding Chukim, the end of Hilchos Me'ilah, right? The Rambam often ends the halachas with something like a homiletic piece, et cetera, some Musar. So he actually says a person is obligated to look into all the mitzvahs and try to figure out what reasons there are for them. Leida sof inyanam kafi kocho, to know the ultimate idea behind them according to his ability. And if he doesn't find a reason, he should not look at the mitzvahs in a negative way. He should not take them lightly. He says at the end of the day, they are still commanded by God, but it's obligatory to do so. Now, you could ask what the value is. So I remember another thing from Reb Moshe Shapiro, who quoted, I remember the exact expression he used in Hebrew, which was awesome, right? There's a verse, the Pasuk in Tehillim, which says, where is this? It says, Ta'amu uru'u ki tov Hashem, Tehillim, Lamed Dalet, I have it here, right? Ta'amu uru'u ki tov Hashem, taste and see that Hashem is good. Now, I remember Reb Moshe Shapiro said, Ze nishma kamo pirsomet leglida. It sounds like an advertisement for ice cream. That's Reb Moshe. Taste and see that Hashem is good. Look, what? What is that? Yeah, I mean, I remember those words coming out of his mouth. I'm like, trying to control myself from laughing, right? But it sounds like an advertisement for ice cream. So Reb Moshe was saying that he thinks maybe what King David is telling us there is that, we have an idea, lo'olam yasok adam b'torah mitzvah shelo lishma, always engage in Torah and mitzvahs, even not for the altruistic reason, because from that you'll come to performance for the sake of God. So he was saying that maybe what David HaMelech is encouraging us to do is to find the Ta'am HaMitzvah, find the Geschmackheit as a motivational factor in doing the mitzvah. And then you'll see that Hashem is intrinsically good and I don't need the reason, so to speak. Right? It could be,
Sort of a lowlishma
it's a
that's going to bring you to
motivational
Shema.
idea, right? And let's face it, right? If the doctor tells me you need to do whatever it is, X, Y, and Z, and I say, could you explain why? Right? He's an Israeli doctor. He says, no, get out. Right? So, there's no offense to Israeli doctors. Actually, I just made an statement about Israel. Bedside manner, they're excellent doctors. Bedside manner is not one of their, and explaining to the patient why you're doing something. Right? I've had some experiences. You may, on the other hand, if the doctor says, well, this particular exercise, what it will do is this and this and this, right? Or this particular medication will do this, and that the impact is, I think I'll be more motivated to do the exercise, to take the medication, than if the doctor says, just listen to me. I went to medical school. You don't know anything. Just do it. Right? Do you think that's easy? Right? Why not? Right? Now, I think in education, when I, should we give kids reasons for doing things? I don't know. You tell your kid, brush your teeth. So at a certain age, you can't explain it to them. But at a certain age, why is it not legitimate to say, listen, you brush your teeth regularly, you won't get fillings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have to go to the dentist. And, right? It's not wrong to expect a human being, we've got brains, right? How do you expect a human being to just like, they have intellectual curiosity, right? I want to know why. Is that not legitimate to even know that? So maybe that's part of the motivation.
We once talked about this. I mean, we might have even talked about this briefly on one of these podcasts. Because I mentioned to you that Rav Shalom Kamen, I had a conversation with Rav Shalom Kamenetsky about Tamei HaMitzvos. I was asking him, let's say there's a fairly accepted tam for a mitzvah, like shechita. like the ritual slaughter of animals. The assumption is that and this seems to be accepted by most people, that this happened to be the least painful way of killing a cow or a sheep or a goat. It's the least painful way to do it. And we should be concerned about not causing pain to animals that are unnecessary.
The Rambam says that, yeah.
And the Ramban, also for our own refinement, let's say, but it's a similar notion. So shouldn't I carry that forward to all animals? Like, for instance, let's say I have a mink farm and we're raising the mink for their skin. We're not raising it to eat it, and therefore I don't technically have to do shechita on a mink, but I've been educated through the meat that I eat. Aren't I in a certain sense expected to carry forward the rationale, the tam, into other areas of my life? Could somebody say to me, could somebody come up to me and say, look, I know you don't do this, but don't you think you should think about it? Don't you think you should think about the that really, even if it costs you more money, even if it's a little bit more difficult, the least painful way to dispatch of those mink, just because look at shechita and look at what we're not just being taught only about shechita, we're being taught about empathy in general and refinement in general. So would you agree with that we would be expected to carry that tam forward even into places where there's not a specific directive from halacha?
Interesting question. I would think so. There's a very interesting the Rambam in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, Shmoina Prakim. So I think it's in Perek Shishi, in the sixth Perek, he asks a question. He said that the philosophers, and also it sounds like this in Mishlei, say that a person who doesn't desire evil is greater than someone who does desire and overcomes his inclination. Right. Nefesh rosha ivso ra. The soul of the evil person desires evil. He says that's what Mishle says. And that means if he desires evil, even though he doesn't do it, but that's not a good indication. And he says the philosophers say this as well. But then he asks, but the sages seem to say the opposite. Right, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, he quotes as saying, a person shouldn't say, I can't stand meat and milk. Lobster makes me nauseous. He should say, Efshili, I'd love it. Smells good, looks good, but Hashem said not to. So that sounds like.
I remember you once were telling me that somebody came to you to complain about shrimp sauce that had a hechsher or something like that, where they felt like it was a chil Hashem to put a hechsher on something like shrimp sauce. And you were saying that same kind of thing. This is
Absolutely.
kosher shrimp sauce, so I should be, the only reason I'm not eating the shrimp is because Hashem told me to, not because I don't like it.
There is actually a tshuva by Rabbi Menashe Klein who actually prohibits giving those type of names to kosher foods. Even kosher Chinese restaurants, he felt is a bad thing because they're creating whatever. But most poskim, you're right, would agree that it's fine.
But that was Hanifa. Wasn't that Hanifa? Because
No.
he was saying, if I call it by Chinese, then I'm showing that something they do, I'm praising their culture.
But he
Wasn't
was
that
also
like Lo Sicha, not Hanifa, Lo Sichonim.
Chaneim,
Yeah, Lo Sichonim, not Lo
I
Sichonim.
don't
Lo
remember.
Sichonim.
May have been approaching it from there.
I think that
So,
was different.
I remember there were at Itri someone brought Beiko's chips to sprinkle on stuff, and one of the Israelis asked, "What is that?" And one of the Americans said, "It's bacon chips. It's like got the tam of chazir." And the guy. He was very upset. We discussed it with Rav Yoel Schwartz, whose Yahrzeit was last week. Discussed it with Rav Yoel Schwartz, and he quoted a Gemara in which Yalta says to her husband, Rav Nachman, everything that Hashem forbade, he created a kosher equivalent. I want to taste meat and milk. And he said, great. He told the chef, get an udder of a cow, which has got naturally flavored, it's meat with the natural flavor of milk in it, right? Grill it and you're good to go. So he says, you see that it's okay. It's not. But anyway, the Rambam says a person should say, I'd like it, but Hashem said not to. So he says, so how do you resolve that with the Mishlei and with the philosophers? So the Rambam says, it depends what type of mitzvah you're talking about. A mitzvah which is not understandable to most people, that we call a chok, like don't eat ham, meat and milk, etc. He says, those, to a great degree, are lessons in obedience and humility. I don't understand it. I obey it anyway. But he says, you wouldn't say the same thing about theft and violence. Rabbi Shimon Galil doesn't come along and say, a person should not say, I do not want to beat this guy to a pulp and steal his wallet. I do want to do that, but Hashem said not to. He says, no. And it's like, I would like to murder this person, but Hashem said not to. Notice Rav Shimon Galil's examples are not those mitzvahs. They're mitzvahs which are not inherently easy or understandable to us.
Right.
So I heard in the name of, I think it was the Brisker Rav, who said that mitzvahs like that were given so that we can incorporate the Tam into our personality. Meaning, there are certain mitzvahs, most of them, which are given with a Tam, where there's a reason that we can understand and comprehend, so that we're supposed to take that time and actually absorb it into our life. So I become a person with less avarice, less tendencies to violence, and so on and so forth, right? But there's no, to create a person who has less tendency towards eating of lobster, not the same thing, right? There, it's more of a lesson in self-control and discipline. But we don't want to have a person who's going through life saying, I would like to rob, cheat, steal, pillage, etc. But Hashem said not to. That we'd agree with the philosophers. If he overcomes that, he's a tzaddik. He's a good person.
Well,
He's not a kosher.
let's so the thing is, could I instruct somebody, not just me as my own personal avodas Hashem, but let's say we have a Tom that almost everybody agrees on. Could there be somebody who's urging others to expand the application of that to other things, and would we consider that sort of morally imperative? That if we agree that this is the Tom, that we should feel that we need, that we have to find the most painless way for an animal to die when I when, if I'm causing its death. Now, should I be expected that I have to think in those terms, even if there isn't a special mitzvah specifically directed towards it?
I think three possible arguments for extension of the Tam.
Okay.
Number one, the Torah tells us, the famous Ramban in beginning of Parashas Kedoshim, the Ramban says the Torah forbids certain foods, the Torah forbids certain types of sexual relationships, but the Torah doesn't say beyond that how much to eat, how much to indulge, etc. He says that is left to the person. So I think, isn't there a
Novel
case
vicious
where we're
satire.
supposed, where we're supposed to take the idea of
I hear.
kedusha and extend it? That's that, and there's three examples of that the Ramban gives. Number one is in that area. The other one is in financial. The Torah tells us this is prohibited, this is prohibited, that's obligatory, etc. But then it gives a general catch-all: va'asisa hayoshar v'hatov, do that which is upright and good. Don't we derive that from a general understanding of the mitzvahs and to move towards that area, right? And apply that. That would seem to be a case, the catch-all. You've got the specifics and then the catch-all, right? I forgot the other example he has. The Ramban has one more example of that. But also, for example, the last mitzvah in the Torah, which is to write a Torah scroll. We all have to write a Torah scroll. So, as you know, the Rosh and other Rishonim, there are Rishonim, and this is actually in the Shulchan Aruch, says that if you wrote a Torah scroll, you're not really fulfilling the mitzvah because no one studies from a Torah scroll today. So that means if I spent, I don't know, 60,000 bucks on a Torah scroll, there are poskim who say I haven't done the mitzvah because you don't learn from the Torah scroll. If I buy a copy of Gateway to Judaism, on the other hand,
Where can you get it?
Amazon, Jewish bookstores, Art Scroll website, then you actually have fulfilled the mitzvah for 29 bucks as opposed to
Is
$60,000.
that 29 flat or is that
It's
29?
29.99, I think it was.
Okay.
Anyway, but that's amazing. So anyway, the Lubavitcher Rebbe,
And that is a tom. That's really applying the tom.
Lubavitcher Rebbe
Right.
says in one of his sichas, he says, the reason is because the Torah itself gives you the reason. The Torah says, right, write for yourself this song, teach it to the Jewish people, Londos Bnei Yisrael, Sima Bafi, and place it in their mouths. He says, so if you wrote it, but the rest of it was not fulfilled, you're not fulfilling the Tam. The Tam obligates me to write and buy books from which we learn and teach. One more example I heard from Rav Shlomo Fischer. It's in the we have. There's a mitzvah prohibition. Don't bring an animal as a korban under 8 days old. Right? Shiva, this is explicit in the Torah. Hey, Shiva's Yom Tachazim, right? From the 8th day onward, it will be accepted. And so you cannot bring an animal as a sacrifice and offering in the Beit HaMikdash and basically in the temple under 8 days old. Fine. Why? The Gemara says because it could be it's a nafil, it could be it's not a viable birth. You don't really know it's a viable birth until 8 days old. If it survives 8 days, that means it was a full term pregnancy on the part of the animal. It's not a nafil. How would you translate nafil? I guess a non-viable
A
fetus. But right, what
miscarriage
is carrots?
or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. So you know if it survives 8 days, fine. So now here's the question. Let's say you've tracked the pregnancy of this animal. You know 100% it's a full-term pregnancy. Can you bring the animal as an offering under 8 days? So we rule, no, you cannot. This goes into the whole argument about Dorshin Taimed Akra or not, right, which we didn't get into, but we probably
But
should.
that is con might be connected. Dorshin Taimed Akra to Tami
Yeah,
and
I think
Mitzvahs.
it might be connected.
Okay.
So there's a question, the Gemara has a huge argument, debate of Dorshin Taimed Akra. Can you expound? But it's misunderstood. It doesn't mean they're not arguing about whether or not I can try to figure out or should try to figure out a reason for a mitzvah. Everyone agrees that's fine. What they're arguing about is if I've figured out the reason, does that affect the practical halachic application of that mitzvah based on the reason I figured out? And that
Like
there
what
is.
the Rush said sounds like he's been dorshing time at a crop.
Exactly, and that the Lubavitcher Rebbe is bothered by, because we don't seem to agree. So he says, yeah, but when the Torah explicitly gives you the reason, that's a different story. You're not fulfilling it if you only do part that, right? But when it comes to the, so clearly in Halacha, we paskin generally that ain dorshin taimed akra, meaning you cannot use your reasoning to modify the mitzvah. So that means even if I track the pregnancy of the cow and figured out that this fetus or this is not a miscarriage, it's a viable calf, I still can't bring it under 8 days old. Okay, but the Rambam says, and this is we actually have, what about if you track the pregnancy of the cow and now I want to eat the calf, not bring it as an offering, I want to eat it, can you shecht the calf under 8 days old? Now there's an iser, there's a prohibition against eating the calf under 8 days old, because if it's a nafel, if it's a miscarriage, not viable, it's
It's
considered
our trade.
treif. But what happens if I track the pregnancy? I know for sure, malolo chadoshov, it's a complete pregnancy. So there the Rambam says you can't eat it. So the Mishnah Lamelech, this is in, I think, in Isurei Mizbeach, right? The Mishnah Lamelech asks, why is it you can't bring it as a korban under 8 days old, even though you know it's a full-term pregnancy, whereas you can eat it under 8 days old, even though because you know it's a full-term pregnancy? What's the difference? He said, the difference is this. The Torah explicitly says, don't bring it under 8 days old as a korban. How do we know you don't eat it under 8 days old? Because the reason of that korban, why, what's the reasoning of not bringing it under 8 days? Because it might be a nephil. That same reasoning prohibits me from eating it under 8 days old. The whole prohibition of eating an animal under 8 days old is because is derived from the tam, the reason
Got it.
of
Got it.
not to bring it as a korban, not to
Right.
bring it as a sacrifice. But he says if the whole reason for the prohibition in eating, not bringing it as a korban, is only from the tam, then guess what? The tam also can be a leniency. Because I can say if I track the pregnancy and I know it's a full-term pregnancy, bingo, I can't bring it as a korban, but I can eat it under 8 days
Right.
old. That's the Mishnah. So that's a case where we're actually taking the tam and extending it.
Nice. Nice.
Both, but yeah, is that
So
both shot the fish there? Was it?
there
Yeah.
are a couple examples that made it into the news several years ago, and during that time you and I spoke about them. But one of them was there was a video that had been released from an undercover
Oh, yes.
PETA. He was people for the ethical treatment of animals. He was an undercover working at agriprocessors or what was Rabashkin at the time, and he had video of what a shechita of a cow looked like, and it was very terrible to watch. I mean, it was the animal was thrashing around and looked like it was alive for minutes after the shechita had already been done. And so I remember we had a conversation about this at the time, and it was also right about around the Terri Schiavo case. And in the Terri Schiavo case, this was parents at odds with a husband. The daughter, who is the wife of this man, was declared brain dead, and the husband wanted her taken off the breathing tubes or whatever, off of life support. The parents did not want her to be taken off life support, and they kept on arguing that you can just look at her and you can see she's there, that she's aware, her she's not brain dead, whatever they say. And people were arguing at the time that it may not look to you like that. They may look alive, but that's not happening through the brain, that's happening through the central nervous system, and it's not an indication of awareness at all or life. So I remember we were talking about it, and I was saying that you could show this thing, but it's just like, on the one hand, they're going to say with Terri Schiavo that no, this person's not alive, but with this animal, which is flaying around, who's had clearly had everything severed, that somehow it's alive. But we both were talking about the general conditions there. Even if you can explain away technically that this is not
Well,
really what.
we're not explaining it away. The
Right.
animals, those reactions, the brain
Yeah.
has been severed from the body.
Yes. Yes.
Reactions,
I didn't mean explain away.
the
I didn't
heart
mean to
can beat
make it sound like it's
for. Right.
not
I'm
true.
saying
It
the
is
heart
true.
can beat for. It's really the
Yeah.
corneal reflexes that which would be an indication, and they cease extremely quickly after shechita. But
So
yeah, but you're right.
supposedly, what happened
Conditions, you're
eventually
saying the
was.
factory farming and all
Yeah,
of that is
right.
cruel.
Right. So the question was, should we be extending what this Tom, which is to be empathetic to the welfare of the animal, should we be extending it broadly? Because eventually they did. I think there's a guy from Toronto who bought it, and then he applied Temple Grandin had come up with all sorts of suggestions
Yes.
to reduce fear and all
Yeah.
other.
They use that widely, I think, in kosher shchita now.
Right. So that to me would be expanding the tam. You're now taking the basic tam, but you feel that compelled as a Ben Torah, because this is supposed to be enlightening you and taking you farther, you feel compelled to take it farther and to extend it. I technically, do I have to do this? No. But should I do this as a person who who understands Tamei HaMitzvahs, you would think that I should have to take it further. So around that time, there were these people that were suggesting that there should be a new Hechsher. And the Hechsher is long, should include these other kinds of things. And also they suggested it should also include how are the people treated that are working together, let's say in our restaurants or working together with the animals. How are the people who are working there treated? A kind of kal v'chomer from the animals. If I'm supposed to be concerned about the well-being of the animals, how much more so should I be concerned about the well-being of the
The thing is,
people that were around?
yeah, but once you have a Hechsher like that, in other words, there's no
I
limitations,
agree. That's
right?
not a,
And
you
you're
can't, there's
taking
no way
something
to
which is
do it.
a matter of piety and a matter of sensitivity, and you're
Right.
like now saying legislate. Well, that's what the Ramban is saying is the Torah doesn't want to do. It leaves certain things to the human discretion, right? Which we should have. Not saying we shouldn't have it, but to have a supervision,
System, like a
it's very
systematic thing.
problematic. But sometimes, yeah, it's interesting. The reasons for the mitzvah can have an impact on the halacha, even today. One of the example was the Torah scroll. The other example is, I always it type of bothers me. Kan Sipor, Shiluah HaKain, right? So, if we before you take the mother bird, or if you want to take the eggs, you got to shoo away the mother bird, right? If you want to take the mother bird, you can't take the eggs as well. In other words, you got right. So very famous mitzvah. And some say it's the idea of you can't to take the product and the producer to destroy both of them to take both of them is like destroying that line, right? It's almost like a species destruction, the producer and the product, right? Or as Rav Kook puts it, you're already taking this, like leave the mother to, you know what I mean? So others say, yeah, the Ramban, it's achzarius. There's a certain sense of cruelty, like eating meat and milk together. Right, the product that supplies life to
I once did it.
flesh.
It did not feel like I was being merciful to the mother.
It
She
doesn't.
flies away. First of all, she flies away and she can still see what you're doing. She's not flying away so far away so she doesn't watch you. Yeah, that reason
Well,
just didn't sit well.
others
Yeah.
say it's like because if the mother hovers over the eggs, you're taking by grabbing the mother too, you're taking advantage of her motherly instinct by taking the eggs.
Got it. Got it.
So, and it's killing the product and the producer. So
Yeah.
there's a lot of cruelty. Understand?
Yeah.
But there's an argument amongst halachic authorities. Let's say I'm hiking and I see a bird's nest. I don't want the eggs. No desire.
Yeah.
But I say to myself, hey.
It's a mitzvah.
So there's a huge argument amongst the Achronim, Chavos Yoyer and the Chasos Sofer and others. Is it? Sure, you do. Now, I know a bird which is unfortunate enough to nest in Monsey, there will be a bus service from New Square, right? Bringing thousands of chazin. Someone's setting up a ladder, they're charging up, right? There's a line around the block. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I'm slow, but I'm not exaggerating. There are hundreds of people waiting, right, to shoo the bird away. Now, there are those who say, look, if the primary idea behind this mitzvah is the don't have this cruelty, etc., right? It's sensitivity to the mother and so on and so forth, then shooing it away when I don't need the eggs makes no sense whatsoever. Don't have the eggs, leave the
Right.
mother alone, leave the nest alone. If, however, you believe, as the Mekubalim, the Kabbalists do, shooing away the mother bird actually is to encourage her to cry out for her children, hence arousing the divine presence to cry for her children, the Jewish people. So then, on the contrary, it's a good thing to do.
You should go out of your way to do it.
Absolutely. So it appears, and I think the Chasa Sofer maybe says this, that the basis of the argument is what's the
What is the
primary
time?
reason, right?
Nice, nice.
Type of interesting. So, there are times when it actually has practical impact aside from our motivation, etc. So yeah, it's a vast subject, and it's a fun subject, and maybe we should talk about it again, I don't know, some other time, because I saw some things like Rav Hirsch, Samson Raphael Hirsch in Chorev and in his on Chumash has some incredible rationale for the mitzvahs, which he came up with. I mean,
Yeah.
not ex nihilo, obviously
Right.
from Torah, but which are just incredible. In fact, I remember one. I'm not going to say it now. This is a cliffhanger. Maybe this is an idea to get people to come next. I don't know. Have
Right. But then we won't even talk about it next time.
yeah,
But
probably.
we got them to come. That was the main thing.
That's the main thing. Clickbait.
That's it. Is that what it means? I'm pretty sure that's not what it means.
I don't
Is
know.
it?
I have no
I
idea.
don't know. Maybe. Okay.
So, but his reasoning for the prohibition of sharpeners wearing wool and linen together. So I explained it once in class, and afterwards, two guys said, well, but I thought it was a chok. It makes total sense. I said, that's an effective term. I mean, if a guy is bothered that the reason for the mitzvah is such a good reason, there's no longer a chok in his mind. That's like,
Yeah,
so okay, but
that's
that's something to talk about. Maybe we should save that for a future, that Od Chazon
Okay.
Lamoed. And as always, folks, if you enjoyed this, click like
And subscribe.
and subscribe and recommend this podcast to your friends. If you don't like it, recommend it to people you don't like.
And it's on Apple, it's
Recommend
on
it to your end.
Spotify, it's on YouTube, and it's on Torah Anytime.
Also on Torah Anytime, yes.
Under Rabbi Becher, or I think,
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah.
yeah. So you might get it with two rabbis in a podcast, but you for sure get it if you go to Rabbi Becher.
Let's see if we can correct that. Okay. Give it its own space. Okay, and
All
thank you very much, everyone.
right. Okay.